welcome to Mad Dog and Meryl's little podcast. I say little podcast. I don't know how you open a podcast. Nobody's watching us. Hey, you don't know if we're in sweatpants. You don't know if Meryl's hair is cold.
Well, that's right, exactly.
You don't know nothing about
you
us right now.
You got my toupee on today? What's going on?
Nobody knows. Podcasts are great. We're just sitting here around the office and chatting a little bit. And, you know, we've been doing grilling 40-some years.
Right,
we've
exactly.
done a lot of different television shows in our days.
Right.
We've actually self-produced our own show
about
25 years ago, at least 30 years ago.
Yeah, a long time ago.
And we got local sponsors, and we were on channel, it doesn't matter around here, channel 26, channel 3. It doesn't matter to you good folks. It was just a nice little local little show that we did and self-produced.
Right. Remember the first one we did was the 10th inning? Was it called the 10th inning we did for 26?
That was a off-the-wall cooking company presents Mad Dog and
right,
Meryl. And the animation was like 40 years ago, you know. Yeah. This brick wall would open up. It was at the Fox's Stadium, and we'd do a little tailgate tip of the week.
Right, yeah.
And drunker and skunk
some of the time. Oh, man. Well, they would have, remember, we're going to do six shows, and they go, can you guys do another one?
Sure.
We look at the table, you know, and, okay, sure, we could do
so
that.
We cut up little bratwursts that we already cooked and made little hors d'oeuvres or something like that. Anyway, so we've done a lot of television shows in our days, and we've been involved with Mad Dog and Meryl's Midwest Grilling. Our good friend, he's our business associate, Rod. We've been involved with him for about 12 years now.
Yeah.
But closely along that, about halfway through, the show's going great, Mad Dog and Meryl's Midwest Grilling, for the first 6 years. But we had the opportunity a couple of times at we were taping at the Bart Starr Tailgate Plaza, and some other guys were nearby. I forget how it all transpired, but we got
the Iowa Car Show.
The Iowa Car Show, is that?
Oh, that's right. Freddie was at the Iowa Car Show.
Iowa Car Show, but his buddies that played the drums and then they
brought him with. Yeah.
He brought him with him there. So at the Iowa Car Show. We played with about four or five guys, and one was Fast Freddy on the keyboards, and it was his little Dixieland band, the rest of them, and stuff like that. And the point was, a couple of guys didn't stick with us very well, but Fast Freddy, he was okay.
He was.
Fast Freddy was okay, and he played
the personality, and just Freddy was Freddy, you know.
Freddy was Freddy, and he played personality. He was a big ham. He liked playing. He liked keeping busy.
He was.
And he's a great guy, and he's an interesting guy. We're going to learn more about Fast Freddy. And everywhere we go, in fact, we just got an email again this week from Kim. And Kim wrote us about 2 weeks ago and said that our show was airing a couple of times in a row, and that probably happens at some stations because they just forgot to rotate it or someone forgot to put a different one in. And she wrote back and said, oh boy, everything's on track. Sure love that piano, man. Freddie's the best piano player in the world. Freddie, she writes. And that's what we get everywhere we go.
That is.
Is Where's Fast Freddy?
Where is Fast Freddy?
Yeah, we're going to get t-shirts that say Where's Fast Freddy on the front, and on the back says Third Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
So we're gonna take a little break here. When we come back, we're gonna learn about a little bit of history about Fast Freddy and see if we can keep him on one track for more than 2 minutes at a time and try to get through about a half hour interview with Fast Freddy. We'll see what happens. We'll be right back.
Louisiana Grills presents Mad Dog and Meryl's Midwest Grillin' Podcast, brought to you by Louisiana Grills and Smokers, Pit Boss Grills, America's Pork Producers, Healthy Homegrown Wisconsin Potatoes, Sundrop Soda, Awesome Shrimp and Seafood, Shooting Star Casino, and by Cherry Delight.
For those who want the best, look no further than the Founders Series by Louisiana Grills. Distinguished grilling machines designed to raise the standard of your backyard culinary experience. The Founder Series beautifully combines the legacy of pellet grilling with the technology of today. If you want the best food, then you need the best grill. The Founder Series delivers robust versatility that enhances the sophistication of grilling with products worthy of the modern outdoor chef.
Welcome to summer. You're staying active, so turn to pork to fuel the fun. It brings the balanced nutrition you need with a burst of flavor you love. So bike on, hike on, golf on, grill on. Pork's got your summer covered. 100% fresh, 100% real pork.
Cherry Delight dried cherries provide a healthy snack and taste delicious. These tasty fruit snacks provide essential nutrients and vitamins. From chocolate-covered Cherry Delights to tart cherry juice, these snacks are full of nutrition. Order online at countryovens.com.
Freddie!
Hey, Fast Freddy's here. What do you need?
Well, Freddie, we need a song out of you. We need a ragtime music song.
Well, let's do something quick. Let's get it rolling here.
Yeah, okay. Dang tootin'. That's pretty. And here comes Mickey Mouse, and Minnie Mouse is running after it. Oh, and there's the piece of cheese. Oh, there's the mouse trap, and they all run away happily. They got the cheese in their hand.
Hey, how did that work?
It worked great, Freddie. Absolutely wonderful. Couldn't have been better.
That's it.
Never sounded so better, so good in your life, Freddie.
Well, you know, I'm used to only getting about 5 to 7 seconds to play, so...
Exactly.
I'm making a full song today.
Yeah. How many different instruments can you play, Freddie?
I used to say 9 different instruments, but most of them are keyboard instruments. But then on, I learned to play the banjos, and there's 3 different banjos that I play. And you know, I'm working on these days is the bagpipes, okay?
Are you really?
Yes, I really am.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're big-winded. That'll work out pretty good.
Well, it should be, but you know, once you fill that bag, you can take it. You use your arm and elbow.
Yep.
And it keeps on playing by itself. You ever notice when these guys are done, it still keeps going? So
yeah,
it's kind of interesting.
It's kind of like you, Freddie.
Well, you know, it's another one of those instruments that you know people talk about today. People always make fun of you know the trifecta, which is the banjo, the accordion, and of course, the bagpipes is the least desirable instrument anybody wants to hear, you know.
Yeah. No, I love the bagpipes. Don't you? I think they're great.
The tuba
would be the least one I'd want. So Freddie, when you were a young Freddie, you grew up in Chicago.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
And, you know, I grew up in... It was a musical family, you know, and as I was just a little kid, my grandfather loved ragtime, my uncle loved ragtime, my mom played piano, but it was my grandfather who said to me, he says, kid, he says, get good enough, he says, that you can get a sandwich and a beer in any saloon, and I said, okay, that's good advice for a 5-year-old. You know?
He was talking to your dad.
Well, he took advantage of that, too, and I say advantage because in my youth, he would travel with me, and he would take me around, and I think his goal was to expose me to as many different great piano players, and around Chicago, there were a lot of them, and I didn't sleep well at night, and so he'd wake me up and say, hey, kid, we're going downtown, and I had a chance to see some of the great ones. I got to tell you that.
You did, and your dad was a photographer for the Sun-Times?
Yes, he did. In his early youth, before he went into the insurance business, that's exactly what he did. And so he was always on the go. He always had the police radio going on. And if there was any type of activity going on, whether it be a fire or domestic dispute and stuff like that. But, you know, it was a great bringing up for me because he'd take me all along a lot of times. He'd leave me in the car and say, kid, don't get out of here. Just stay in the car. Of course, nobody does that. And I go there and I see some of this horrendous stuff, and believe it or not, it was a great lesson in life because he taught me that even though there's a lot of turmoil and there's some very, very bad things, that doesn't mean you have to do that. That doesn't mean you have to wreck your life by doing some of the stuff that you're seeing here, and I got to say it was great advice, and I would say that I really respect the fact that he took the time to explain that to me. So, you know, I don't live in fear. But at the same time, I do have a tremendous amount of respect for the law.
Yeah. And rightfully so. Yeah.
Now, Freddie, how old were you when you were playing at these bars and things?
Well, you know, I got to tell you a story, and I'm combine it with a song, okay?
Sure.
He wakes me up one night. I'm laying in bed. He comes up and shakes me. My mom says, what are you doing? He says, I'm taking him downtown. And he says, really? And she says, come on, let the kids sleep. He says, oh, he's going with me. I get dressed up. He takes me all the way downtown to the Ambassador East Hotel. And the room where they had their cocktails was called the Pump Room. And with that, he had reserved a table close to a giant grand piano. We sit down at this table. I get a Coca-Cola. He gets a cocktail. And a guy comes out, and he was a big black guy, and he sat down at the piano, and he played a song. And I'm going to play a little bit of the song for you. It goes a little bit like this.
What was
now that song is called Misty.
That's right. I thought it was Misty.
That's the most unique version of Misty I've ever heard. It's beautiful. I'm
crying.
Well,
you know, he looked at me and he said, what do you think? And I said, the guy played it pretty good. He said he should. He wrote it. It was Earl Garner.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
It was Earl Garner who played that live for me as a kid, which made a tremendous impression on me, realizing that maybe someday I get the opportunity to be in the center of a wonderful cocktail lounge or on stage with a big grand piano and get a chance to do that. And you know what? It was a great goal, and believe it or not, I've done it many, many, many times.
I so, bet you are. And you know, I might add to the listeners out there, Freddie's back at his home. He's in front of a beautiful, how much does that Stein weigh? he's in front of a beautiful.
I think the three of us could barely lift it, but you know, that's the best thing.
He's in front of a beautiful grand piano, and he plays the most beautiful music in the world. But it's not coming across too well on this phone, Freddie. By the way, so
it isn't.
No. You know what it is, and that's why when you were playing the first tune, it sounded like Minnie Mouse was chasing Mickey Mouse in 1952. They were both after the same piece of cheese. They got the cheese, they ran away, and they lived happily ever after. And
well, that's probably because I learned most of my music off of cartoons. So,
you know? Well, that's probably... That's
you know, as we're talking here, I took the piano and changed it around a little bit. You know, I actually closed the top on the piano and put it down because I didn't want it to be too loud. But maybe... Just maybe it's too muffled.
Maybe you closed it on the cat's tail because that's the way it sounded.
Well, all right. Now it's been modified, and the top is open. It's just, you know, it's like a mechanic. You can't work on the engine if you don't open the hood. So.
That's exactly right. Right. Yeah, unless you're changing the tires.
So Freddie, what was your first paying gig?
Paying gig.
You know, my first paying gig was actually in Chicago at a place called the Jolly Banjo. I worked with a band called the Banjo Buddies, and they're a famous band, and they still play today. And a guy by the name of Ed McIntyre let me play piano with the band. They didn't have a piano player, and they still don't to this day. The only piano player they've ever had was me, and whenever I came to town, I played. But he was a great encourager to me because... I was young. I was 21 years old.
Wow.
He said, kids are good. And we cut our first album that year in the early 70s. And it was a great thing. I'm still in touch with the original members of the band who I know so well, who were young like me. You know, a lot of things that you hear with ragtime and jazz, I was in my early 20s, and I was listening to guys in their 70s because they grew up with the music. They wrote the music. And if you were in the Chicago market, you were playing with the originals. And as a kid, my dad said, oh, let my kids sit in, let them play. And, of course, every dad is proud of their son or their kids, and they're trying to encourage it. No, we don't let any kids play. Well, he was relentless. He was a great salesman. I'd get up there on piano, and the next thing you know, I'm sitting in with the band, and they took me under their wing, and I learned a real lot because of his encouragement. And that made a big difference, too, because if you knew me as a kid, I was very, very, very soft-spoken and not outgoing at all, you know.
Well, I bet you were. Yeah.
And then how did you change then?
Why did you change? Why did you change, Freddie?
Well, you take a 21-year-old guy and throw him in a classroom of 20 students. Hey, you're on stage. You're on right now.
That's right.
And you better get these kids interested. You know how it is. I don't think there's any two guys better than you two when it comes to getting information across and sharing how to do the stuff you love to do. And, you know, you're doing the cooking stuff and the grilling all of the time. For me, you know, my background was actually cars and machining, and I was teaching something that I loved to do. It came so natural to me, and what a great way to spend 36 years at Shawano High School.
Let's move into that. So you're a 21-year-old kid, you go to college, you went to Stout?
Yeah, I did. I went to University of Wisconsin, Stout and Menominee.
Yep.
And I joined a fraternity, Kappa Lambda Beta, and that kind of got me out of my shell a little bit. You know, the standing joke is we had a reunion here, a 50-year reunion, believe it or not, at my house. And the guys, first of all, I always played piano at the fraternity house. But the thing is that I never, ever in my whole college career, and there's more than 50 guys that'll back me up on that, never once had a single beer or a drink. Just didn't drink at all.
Then why did you change that, Freddie, too? Now you're changing your life. First, you can't get up in front of people. Seriously, Freddie, huh?
You know, the standing joke is I don't think anybody drinks until they have kids. So, when I raised my two boys, I think that made a little bit of a difference. But you can't have a band called the Bourbon Street Boys or the Bourbon Street Firehouse Jazz Band without having a shot of bourbon or a drink every once in a while to go along with the whole scene. So,
sure.
You know, it came around natural. You know, Merrill, he's a bourbon guy, and, you know, we understand what that's all about.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
So graduating from Stout University, you got your master's in teaching.
I did. Actually, you know, once you first start out, you start out with a bachelor's degree, and that gets you in the door.
You know.
I mean, they didn't pay a lot of money in those days. I think my first contract was for just shy of $6,000, but you start, and it was wonderful because the experience was great. And then as time goes on, then you work on the master's degree, and I was fortunate enough because I went to Madison for part of my graduate work, and if you're from Wisconsin, you know, that's part of the Wisconsin spirit, too. And so between Stout and Madison, you know, I was able to get the advanced degrees that I needed to have, and when you say needed to have, actually in teaching, the only way you go up on the salary schedule is by your amount of education and experience.
Exactly, yeah.
So 36 years, that was good to me.
And let's explain to people, you weren't a music teacher, and you weren't a history teacher, and you weren't an English teacher, and
I'm a shop teacher.
Shop teacher, yeah.
You know, and I use the word shop with a lot of pride. You know, I was president of the state association, and I've been fortunate to win just about every accolade and award you could get in that area. It's called technology education today, but if you want to be on a learning curve, that's the way to go, because you go from cars that were point and condenser and carburetors and regular brakes to all the advanced electronics that we do today. And at the time I retired, that's what I was teaching, all of this computer diagnostics and anti-lock brakes and you name it. And then in the machining field, everything went from taking and running machines by hand to computer-controlled machines today. And you have to know how to program that. And for me, if you're going to teach it, you better know how to do it. So that's what I did.
So we've seen the evolution of the grill industry. You saw the evolution of the auto industry.
You hit it right on the head, yes.
Yeah. What about a hot rod high? What did you you made hot rods, right? The kids made hot rods.
My last 10 years, I was taking some summer courses, and I went to a technical college that had a program called Hot Rod University, and they let the students build performance engines. And engine building, of course, the more you now modify them, of course, the better they're going to get. Well, I started Hot Rod High with the idea that I taught machine shop, welding, foundry, and of course, automotive and engineering. And if we could combine all of those things, why not take and make a real life-size car? You know, when I grew up, all of the kids were building little model cars. And I can tell you, you learn a lot by doing that, by putting all those little pieces on there and knowing the drivetrain and where everything goes. But when you build a full-scale car, that's remarkable. And the one thing I got to tell you about it is that the way we were able to pull it off was because the school and the community didn't have to pay a dime to do this. The cars were prepaid for by the people who wound up getting the car. So they sat down and we put together a plan for what we were going to build. They put their money in the bank. I had a charge card and a checkbook, and they had a receipt for all the parts that went into it. And the kids got to use things that they would have never seen before. When the UPS guy came, it was like Christmas every day because of the chrome pieces and stuff like that.
Isn't that crazy? See, and I swore up and down. I said, Freddie built those cars. Every year he had those cars built so he could take that car and barter it for something. I swore
I wound up with the first car because people didn't believe it could be done.
Sure.
And they said, oh, you can't start a program like that. Nobody's going to believe in it. And we started it, and I put the money into it to show. And from then on, we did 6 cars in 8 years before I retired. So that was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. How do you know which end of the welding rod is hot?
You know, that's the best lesson there is. I've told you that story many times. I said, if you want to know, you touch it and you'll find out, you know.
Yeah. The just amazing. So Freddie, you have a pickup truck that's called Wisconsin Pickers.
That's correct. That is, again, another one of my, you know, people kind of likened me to Forrest Gump because I don't know what I'm going to be doing next. If you said to me 5 years ago that you were going to be on Mad Dog and Merrill,
oh,
I would have not necessarily dreamed that. I might have dreamed it, but I didn't plan it. And, you know, the crazy part about it is that when I retired from school, I had to take stuff home that I had in the shop. And I had some gas pumps and I had some larger pieces of equipment. And kids helped me load them on my pickup truck, kind of like a barbecue grill.
Yep.
And anyway, they helped me load that on. I stopped at the hardware store on my way home, and before I came out the door, there was a lady putting a little note under my windshield, and she says, well, it looks like you're one of those pickers guys, because of the people on TV today. And they said, would you come over and take a look at the stuff I have in my garage and basement? I said, okay. And that was day one. I got home, and I couldn't lift the gas pump and stuff out of the truck by myself. Does that sound familiar?
It certainly does.
Yeah.
I couldn't lift it out by myself. So the next day I went over to one of the large box stores, and I came out, and again, there was a note underneath the windshield saying, it looks like you're one of those pickers guys. Would you do that? Well, with that, I got the truck lettered up. I got some big white wall tires on there. Believe it or not, that gas pump is still on the back of that truck, and every once in a while I go off. But, you know, I'm fussy. I don't want household goods, and I don't want primitive antiques and furniture. I'm only interested in automotive and maybe some old outboard motors and that kind of stuff.
Isn't that crazy? That's crazy. So the Mad Dog and Merrill, you like to eat, Freddie, don't you?
Well, you know, you two guys, I don't know what it is. There's always a chemistry in life, and when you meet people and you get along really good, you know, I always joke because I know we met, you know, doing the Packer game stuff, and with you guys tailgating and doing the things that you did and me playing banjo for the Packers, you know, we would get together and play a few songs. But it wasn't until I took your grilling class. You know, you had that class at Great Grills in Green Bay.
Yep.
And I got my neighbor and convinced me that we should go and learn how to do beer can chicken. I got some flame shirts over at Walmart, and we put them on, and we went there. And I got to tell you, it was the most impressive thing in the world. For the $20 we spent, we ate $50 worth of food. You know,
it was amazing.
You guys cooked up everything under the sun. It was spectacular.
That's why we don't do those classes anymore.
But that's, and you know, and I took it the second one that came around. People, I loved the first one.
Yeah.
But I took them two in a row. They said, "Oh, here's this guy again." You know.
Yeah.
Coming back. But you guys, you know, I tell you, people said, "Freddie, you're the teacher." You guys are probably the best that I know. I got to tell you that. I watched our TV show today, and you guys were taking and doing a neat show that was down in Sheboygan, and I learned something all of the time. My neighbors come around here, and they're always amazed. "Freddie, what you got on the grill today?" And I pick up on all those techniques that you guys are showing. I can't do them all, but I'll tell you what, I tried them the other day. I did learn one thing the other day, though. Remember those kebabs you gave me?
Yes, sir. Those aren't meant
you
to
remember
be,
that?
Those weren't meant to be grilled.
Well, that mozzarella cheese is somewhere down in the bottom of the
grill. Those weren't meant to be grilled. The shrimp were already cooked. They were cold skewers to be cooked cold. Eat cold. I tried telling you that day, but you never listened, Freddie. You know, someday I'm gonna kick your. Someday I'm gonna kick your ass, Freddie.
Well, you know, my attention span is very short.
By the way, shooting the television shows that we do with Mad Dog Merrill and Fast Freddy, things go by fast. Things go by. Everyone does their own little thing, but everybody tries to coordinate things. And once a show while we're taping, that's my line to you, isn't it, Freddy? I'm gonna kick your ass.
I know that. I'm not going to take you on. You know, play in Seattle.
Well,
you got a hot poker there and all kinds of stuff. I don't. I'm not going to mess with that. I've seen the size of that spatula.
Yeah,
there you go, exactly.
Hey, speaking of which, real quick, you know, we've been doing a bunch of podcasts I don't know if when they air and stuff like that, but we interviewed Ray Lampe, a good friend of ours, and he's with Louisiana Grills too. And you're going to be picking up your 800 and your griddle from those good folks. And it's so nice to have good grills, isn't it, Freddie?
I agree. And I think each one has something specialty. You know, our sponsors continue to change. You know that.
Yes.
And,
yep. Everyone does.
And I have learned some recipes that I do on one of our others, well, the Big Green Egg, I can say.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it comes to taking and doing some slow-cooked ribs and taking and putting a turkey or a chicken or something on that baby, there's nothing better. You can get that. That's charcoal. That's original wood charcoal, and it works out great. But, you know, everybody who sees me do that, the number one tip that I learned from you guys is that once the grill is heated up, I always put a pan of water in that thing.
Exactly.
And that can of water sits there up between the charcoal and the grates, and that's what keeps the stuff moist. And, you know, if you add a little seasoning to that, maybe a little bourbon to that water.
Yep, just a little bourbon with the
just
water.
Just a little.
Yep.
Don't waste it. No. But you can add a little stuff to that. But those are things, you know, Fast Freddy.
You just said you add bourbon, but you'll never waste that drop of bourbon in that water. I know you, Freddy. It's never been done by you.
So, you know what? That's how good we know each other.
Exactly. I know you never waste that bourbon.
So, Freddy, what car are you restoring now?
Well, I'm actually working on a car I started 35 years ago. It's my original first car that I owned, and it's a 1967 Oldsmobile 442. And it's a muscle car. It's from that muscle car era, but this is a rare one with a 400 cubic inch engine with three deuce carburetors on it, three two barrels on it, the four speed 391 posi, but it's going to show car quality. And the car sat for so long that finally my oldest son, who actually started helping me take the car apart, said, "Dad, we got to get that car finished." So I'm actually getting help from a friend of mine with an automotive restoration garage in up at Stiles Junction. And so it's in process right now. So that's kind of good.
So, I mean, you took everything apart. We're talking about the door handles, everything completely apart to restore this, right?
Every nut, every bolt has either been wire wheeled or sandblasted, painted, plated, or chromed. You know, just saying that each continual fastener. But, you know, people build those cars in order to take and try to sell them at some of these big auctions and stuff. That car won't ever be sold. You've seen my Model A that I have in the garage, the green one that I did with my dad.
Oh, I thought you meant your wife.
Yeah, that Model A, that 29 we bought in Shawano back in the 50s, I think I was 14 years old. And when we bought it, we restored it together. I did every nut and bolt. That's how I learned cars from the bottom up. And I drove that car to high school. But that car's a family heirloom, and that thing gets passed down just like my banjos will, you know.
Sure. Yeah, well, you know what? Same as the banjos, you just keep stringing us along.
Oh, I do. You know that.
Yeah. You know, I met a guy about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, who goes, "Oh, we got a mutual friend, Freddie," says, "Yeah, we own the SS Washington or SS Baltimore. Don't you own some goddamn big model type
warboat
or something?"
Are you ready for this? It's a 38-foot replica of the USS Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It's the original battleship, and it was built by a friend of mine from Madison, Wisconsin. The boat floats. It has an internal outboard motor on the thing. And I was very fortunate enough to meet this gentleman by the name of Bruce Mose. His uncle developed the Mose process that people use today in dermatology for taking and doing surgery. But he himself was an inventor and developed several different cars as well as this boat. He did sidecars for bicycles. And before he passed, he willed his collection, his museum, to me. And without having enough room to have everything in my own possession at home, I've farmed it out. People who got that stuff are using it. And I think they're actually using that boat to promote down in Scandinavia, VFW and veterans. And I'm happy for that.
Oh, yeah, good for that. Good. Yep. Well, you got your hands you've had your hands involved with a lot of things over the years, and you always will until the day that we all pass, and that's the same as Merrill and I. You're a great asset to Mad Dog and Merrill's Midwest Grilling. The live piano playing is amazing. Someday we'll kick your ass, but that's beside the point. But we do appreciate you for what you do and for who you are. And I can't get, you know, and I'll say one thing about Fast Freddy before we let him go. And the reason you're called Fast Freddy is because you used to race hydroplanes.
Yes, I did. Yeah, that was another one of a great thing that I did with my boys. You know, I was never a great sports athlete, but when it came to motors and stuff like that, put me behind the wheel of something that worked out great. And living on Shawano Lake, it's the dream of every racer to have a racetrack in our backyard. And we could practice, and the boys learned from the time that they were little kids. And they were phenomenal boat racers. And, in fact, you know, we've still got a whole garage full of these different racers, the race boats and engines and all of that kind of stuff. And you know what? I saw a guy one time, and he was in his 90s, and they brought him down to the pier, not the pier, but the pier, Wisconsin. And they two guys held him by the shoulders. They put him in a race boat. He went once around. he had the biggest smile on his face, and he said, you know what, I lived a good life, and he was happy, and I thought to myself, why, maybe that'll be me someday.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, you know, Mad Dog and Merrill, you know, people probably don't realize, but they're going to know, that all that music is original, and all of that music is written on the spot. You know that.
Yep,
and,
exactly.
And I get a lot of time, and so I'm always watching and listening and doing what's going on there. And with that, it gives me an opportunity to come up with something original. And you know, there's also a selfish reason for that too, because
alcohol.
Any other music that's probably written. You know that.
Yep.
That would put us in trouble if we were playing music that was owned by somebody else. So we own all of our own music, and that's what makes it unique.
The problem is you have enough drinks when we're at the shooting gig that you don't know what you played the time before. That's the biggest problem, Freddie.
Well, you know, people say that all the time. It all sounds the same, you know. And music is like that. You know, there's only seven notes. It's just what order you put them in.
Sure. Exactly. Well, Freddie, I'm gonna regret saying this, but it's been a pleasure talking to you. And why don't you play us a half a ragtime song before we go? Because it sounds like shit.
You know what? Then I'll write one that has that title. Okay.
Would you do that? Play it right now. Play it right now. It's been a pleasure talking with you, Freddie. Play some of that ragtime.
Oh. See Charlie Chaplin coming out to the street?
I know.
Falls down, gets back up.
Yeah.
Buster Keaton with the train.
Yeah. There's a tight walk. Or who is it? Who did the tight walk? Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he's playing his heart out right now, you know, ladies and gentlemen. Them fingers are just moving.
Boom. All right. Good job,
Good job, Freddie.
Well, I can hear you talking in the background. It's the usual deal. You talk right over me. You don't care about it.
Oh, we were narrating. And our narrating gives you a 10.
Yes.
You're a 10,
but
Freddie.
But you know what? You guys are more than kind. You absolutely are.
Yeah.
And I can't wait for our next adventure. That's what we call it.
It's an adventure, and our adventures are coming up, that's for sure. We get one this time of year every week with you, Freddie, so it's a pleasure.
Well, you guys are the best, and with that, you know what time it is, right, Merrill?
Yeah, it's bourbon time. All right, Freddie, we'll see you down the road.
Good, buddy.
Ask your grocer for the sweet, thick, rich flavor of Mad Dog and Merrill's award-winning sauces, seasonings, accessories, and so much more. Or visit maddogandmerrill.com and go to the online store.
Ask your grocer for Mad Dog and Merrill.
Calling kids of all ages. Visit the world's largest Sundrop University Museum.
Tour the old streets of Sean.
Watch a movie on the history of Sundrop.
Watch Sundrop being bottled.
Belly up to the tasting room.
Visit the gift shop.
Drink local, be happy.
Twigsbeverage.net.
The deep waters of Argentina hosts a colony of all natural, sushi grade, royal red colossal shrimp. So tender and flavorful, there's only one word to describe it.
Awesome!
Fast Freddy here with my buddy Rebel from
Awesome Shrimp!
If you want that same awesome shrimp that Mad Dog and Merrill grill on the show, check out awesomeshrimp.com.
Order online or find a market near you. Awesome shrimp and seafood!
Hey, our name says it all.
Did you know 1 out of 8 of your neighbors face hunger every day?
We're Mad Dog and Merrill, ambassadors to Feeding America. Just $1 donated provides 4 meals to your neighbors in need.
Go to feedingamerica.org.
Well, Well, that was our good friend, Fast Freddy. Freddy Beyer, we call him Fast Freddy on the keyboard.
He is.
And his keyboard playing usually sounds better than that. But he's at home in Shawano, and normally we have the sound system. We have a microphone set up right to his, his piano that goes into an amp. That amp goes right into the recorder, and it sounds just absolutely gorgeous each and every time. It just sounds a little old-fashioned.
It does. It does remind me of, just of the motion pictures where you got the piano player in the background.
That's all it is.
He's a great guy, very good friend.
You can't get him to say nothing bad about nobody.
No.
I try so hard to get him to say something bad about somebody, and he just that's what he said his dad taught him. He said his dad taught him some good values along the way, and that's a wonderful thing, and he's a great guy.
He is. We never got into Buddy Holly today, though.
Oh, shoot. We'll have to have now. We won't have Freddie on again, but that was a good time. But he's got some great stories to tell.
Oh, he does. He does. There's plenty of them that that I love. He's just a great guy. You laugh all the way.
Yeah.
But he's got plenty of
He loves his ice cream. We didn't bring up ice cream.
Oh,
he loves his ice cream. Got to have ice cream.
Yeah. We're riding with Ron and him. It's like, okay, well, there's this place in Warsaw. Oh, here, let's see where the other place is. Go way out of the way just to get a scoop of ice cream. But it was good ice cream, I have to admit. It was definitely, it was worth it. So he knows his places. He really does. So.
Yeah, but he's a barterer. He's a barterer. He'd rather barter than get that wallet out.
Yeah.
But that's Freddy.
It is. Good man.
And I'll tell you what, that's you folks, and that's our little presentation for the day. Peace, love, till we meet again.
Yep. Happy grilling.